But I've been doing all this talking, and suffering on the other line is, I think, Steve Gowans. Are you there, Steve?
I am, Phil. Hello.
Good to be talking to you. We just spoke, actually, to Zafar Bengash about the issue in Kashmir, and that involves two powers that are really intimately concerned and might potentially come to blows in this conflict, and that's India and Pakistan. Now, in your article about North Korea, you point out that the United States is threatening to overtly take action. They certainly, I know they use this language, we're not taking nuclear weapons off the table. All kinds of military things might happen. And this is because North Korea has developed the capacity to make a bomb, and I guess has maybe exploded one or two, I wouldn't know. But why the focus on them when India and Pakistan, they both were, I think, helped by U.S., Britain, and France to develop their nuclear weapons?
Well, indeed. And, a number of countries have recently tested ballistic or cruise missiles, and a handful, not least Russia and China, possess nuclear-tipped ICBMs capable of striking the United States. And yet, it's the missiles and nuclear weapons program of only one of these countries, North Korea, that arouses panic in Washington. Mm-hmm. We could ask, what makes tiny North Korea, which has a very small defense budget and a very rudimentary nuclear arsenal and missile capability, a threat so menacing that, according to the press, worry has spread in Washington and the United Nations?
Mm-hmm. Well, the article is titled, "The Real Reason Washington is Worried." The real reason about North Korea, by the way, it's at gowans.wordpress.com, July 5th. And we're speaking to the author, Stephen Gowans. So what is the real reason?
Interestingly, someone said recently that the truth is often buried on the front page of the New York Times. And this seems to be no less true of the real reason Washington frets about North Korea's missile test, because last week there was an article that appeared by David E. Sanger. Now, David E. Sanger not only is a reporter for the New York Times, but is also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is kind of the unofficial think tank of the U.S. State Department. And almost every member of the Obama administration was also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. So Sanger wrote that the fear in Washington is not that North Korea would launch an attack on the United States. And the fear is, with an ICBM, North Korea can now reach the continental United States. Sanger points out they would never do that because that would be suicidal, and they're not stupid, and they have no intention of committing suicide. Mm-hmm. But he points out then that Washington's alarm is that the North Koreans now have the ability to strike back. Mm. In other words, Pyongyang has acquired the means of an effective self-defense. Because it has, Sanger then writes, this makes North Korea a dangerous regime.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that raises, your article echoed for me a remark I heard from the former Attorney General, Ramsey Clark. He says that across America, black people are arrested on the charge of resisting assault.
Yeah. Right.
And so they, in this case, would seem to be what they know. You use the word, but we should use it all the time, shouldn't we? The U.S. is a hegemon. And that means that they always have to have the advantage on anybody they talk to. And if they don't, as I follow your article, the decision is eliminate them.
Yes, they must impose their will by one means or another. And that impose their will by one means or another, those are the words of a man who was the former co-chair of the U.S. National Intelligence Council, which is responsible for producing the U.S. national intelligence estimate. But, you know, the United States has been trying for the last 70 years to change the government in North Korea.
Yeah, and tell us about that 1950 to 53 war, which I recall was called a police action. Later they called it the Korean conflict. By the way, you had a remark I never saw before. Douglas MacArthur said that the damage they did made him, so much damage in North Korea, when he saw it, it made him vomit?
Yes, indeed, and there
Douglas
was.
MacArthur was capable of being sick at what he did?
And which he acknowledged in other remarks that I didn't write, that he said, you know, I've seen a lot of destruction, but when I saw what happened in North Korea, I vomited. And,
amazing.
I mean, the amount of destruction was just unthinkable. It's not widely known that the United States and its allies in North Korea exterminated 20% of the North Korean population. They burned to the ground every town in the country. Something else that's not recognized is that more napalm was dropped in North Korea than later in Vietnam. The devastation was so widespread that the survivors were driven into subterranean shelters in which they lived and worked. And, of course, there's still a vast network of subterranean shelters in North Korea. You know, interestingly, 4 years ago, the Wall Street Journal revealed that the White House had developed what they called a playbook for North Korea. And the idea of the playbook, which had been put together by U.S. Pacific Command, was essentially to provoke the North Koreans into reacting in a bellicose manner. And then they could say, well, you know, you see the North Koreans are always bellicose, and now we have to take a firm hand with them. And one of the ways they did that was by deliberately flying two nuclear-capable B-2 bombers essentially along the border between North Korea and South Korea. And they said the flights were deliberately carried out in broad daylight at low altitude to produce the intended effect. They said, we could fly it at night, but the point was for them to see it. Hmm. The article acknowledged that, to quote from it, defense officials acknowledge that North Korean military officers are particularly agitated by bomber flights because of memories of the destruction wrought from the air during the Korean War.
They
play on that.
Yeah. Once you begin to think, get into what they call the military mind, you end up with Dr. Strangelove. I think that's just a law of life of the guy who thinks outside the box, unfortunately, and puts everybody at risk. And now, we're speaking to Stephen Gowans. By the way, the title of the article is The Real Reason Washington is Worried About North Korea, which Stephen points out is because they are capable, perhaps, of defending themselves, and that's why they're afraid. But you also point out that they have put them through decades of economic warfare, and because they have what they, I guess, Pentagon, White House calls the Marxist-Leninist economy, which that's a crime. Is that right?
Indeed, that's a crime. There's a document by the U.S. Congressional Research Service on sanctions on North Korea, where they list all of the sanctions, and you can go through it, and there are dozens and dozens and dozens of sanctions. And they also list the reasons the sanctions were imposed. And you'll find instances in which sanctions have been imposed because North Korea has a Marxist-Leninist economy, as if that is somehow a legitimate reason for trying to ruin the economy of another country.
Do they stop and explain what that would be? Do any translation of those words? And let's see, they distribute what? To whom? they share the wealth in some way? Is that? I wonder if they bother to tell people down the line. The words Marxist-Leninist is supposed to get it all done, I assume. It's like being a Roman Catholic.
Well, the notion that the United States is somehow the champion of democracy around the world just becomes ludicrous in the face of that, since it's hardly democratic to dictate to other people how they should organize their economic or political affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And then to punish them economically and try to destroy their economy because they've chosen a system that's different from the one that prevails in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, as Stephen Gowans, I want to tell people, by the way, Stephen, you're going to be in New Haven, Connecticut, 2 o'clock on July the 15th, and you're going to be in New York on July the 14th, Bastille Day, and I think it's a hands-off Syria coalition. You're, of course, talking about your book, Washington's Long War on Syria, in which there's a similar problem with Syria, that they refuse to accept diktat. Where are you speaking, by the way, in New York again?
That I can't recall. I'm also speaking in Rochester on the 16th.
See, the publicity people can't get the author to look at his schedule. By the way, people just go to WordPress, gowans.wordpress.com, to see Stephen's schedule. I do know it's a Solidarity Center, I think, in New York. And now, this, you point out, and it's this matter of how to get peace, and it's not so complicated, right? I mean, the U.S. makes it sound as though you have a regime with whom you can't negotiate, allegedly, because of, I guess they're Marxist-Leninists, maybe that's it. But China and Russia and South Korea have called for direct talks between the U.S. and North Korea, have they not?
Well, yeah. I mean, importantly, I mean, the North Koreans want peace because they benefit from the peace. The Americans have no intention of achieving any peace except one that's on their terms, and that's one in which the North Korean government steps down. But the North Koreans in January offered, and they do this frequently, they offered to sit with the United States at any time to discuss U.S. war games and North Korea's nuclear weapons and ballistic missile program. And essentially what they said was, we'll freeze our program if you stop conducting your war games. And this proposal has since been taken up by China and Russia and by South Korea's new president. And it's been presented to Washington a number of times. On each occasion, Washington just peremptorily rejects the proposal, refusing to acknowledge that there's any equivalency between their war games and their playbook and their attempt to provoke the North Koreans, which they deem legitimate, and North Korea's missile and nuclear tests, which they call illegitimate.
Mm-hmm. Now, and these war games, and I think the last, I think I saw someone, maybe it was the former U.S. Ambassador Richardson, I'm not sure, but on RT, as late as today, that they were talking about these war games. They were, again, where they're flying a plane called the B-1-B. What is that plane? And I mean, this is. And by the way, I heard that they actually dropped a dummy bomb during one of these exercises.
Yeah. I mean, the B-1B is a strategic nuclear bomber, which is intended to... Nuclear bombs. And on two occasions in May, they flew B-1B bombers into South Korea along the North Korean border. And just a few days ago, they did this again. This time, the B-1B strategic bombers were accompanied by South Korean fighter jets, and they dropped dummy bombs on a proving range that was not too far from the North Korean border, and then they left accompanied by Japanese fighter jets. At the same time, they've sent not one, but two aircraft carrier forces into the waters between Japan and North Korea. And they recently deployed an Aegis destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the North Korean press, the United States has said that it would now quote, regularize sorties of strategic bombers to the Korean Peninsula. So this won't be a sometime thing, but a regular thing.
There's an additional thing, and we've spoken to you in the past about it, this introduction of a new missile system which upsets the general balance of military hardware in the region. And when I say that, China, I believe, and Russia to a certain extent, but for China, this becomes an immediate matter because they're within the range, striking range of this missile system, right?
Yeah, it's the THAAD missile defense system, which, by the way, I think violates the armistice agreement because they're not supposed to introduce new weapon systems into the Korean Peninsula. There's also talk on the part of Washington of reintroducing strategic nuclear weapons into Korea. And by the way, it was the Americans who were the first to introduce nuclear weapons onto the Korean Peninsula when they introduced strategic nuclear weapons, which they still have deployed throughout Europe. But THAAD, the missile defense system, which is essentially a missile defense radar, enables the Americans to peer deep into Chinese territory. And so it is a threat to the Chinese. The Chinese regard it as a threat.
Isn't that a kind of a further, this sounds almost like a further trick by the U.S. to keep trying to make this a discussion between them and China, where China is supposed to muscle North Korea?
Yes, and the former Secretary of State had made clear to China that maybe they could remove THAAD if the Chinese would do something about the North Koreans. In other words, they said, well, we're putting this here because of the North Koreans, but if you do something about the North Koreans, then we could take that missile defense system out.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, people talk about Trump being vulgar and all that, but all these people, these strategies are kind of thug strategies. I mean, we all understand playground or neighborhood bullies. This is what it is, right? You want me to beat your little brother up here in order to get somebody's attention?
Absolutely. And, I mean, the intention is to continue to threaten until someone eventually just gives up. And you know, the Reagan administration used exactly the same tactics in connection with the Soviet Union. I was just recalling this. The Reagan administration used to send phalanxes of B-52s streaming toward the Soviet border. And at the last minute, they would turn back. And they would do this repeatedly. And, of course, the intention is simply to exhaust your potential enemy, to continue to frighten them, to intimidate them. And that's precisely what it is that the United States does to North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
It does it every year with massive war games. It's doing it now by sending B-2 or B-1B bombers into the Korean Peninsula, by threatening to deploy strategic bombers.
Mm-hmm. And again, you pointed out that they're the ones who introduced these weapons. And we should ask you to tell us the story again. Well, something I always highlight when I talk to you is that the decision, the command of the forces, the armed forces of South Korea, which is pretty, it's a big group, will be under U.S. authority should there be any conflict, right?
Yes, wartime command of South Korean forces lies with the United States, with the U.S. general.
By the way, shouldn't it be obvious to everyone that for any patriotic Korean, that North Korea is a patriotic state? Because who gives your command over your armed forces, particularly at the most vital time for your people, to a foreign power? You're not a... That's not a patriotic thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You would be, in many places, be regarded as a traitor.
Indeed.
I mean, I can see how North Korea, I mean, I don't know, maybe you do, how it plays out in politics, but clearly many Koreans on both sides of that border, but mostly on the, I mean, certainly on the South, where everybody assumes they're with the U.S., there's got to be a lot of admiration for the North.
No, not because of the, well, I mean, there's a propaganda system which keeps much of that information away from people in South Korea. I know the historian, historian, Bruce Cumings, mentioned that being somewhere where South Korean students were introduced to the for the first time to the history of Kim Il-sung, the founder of North Korea. They had no idea that he was a significant leader of the guerrilla forces, which are trying to drive the Japanese out of Manchuria and Korea, which they'd colonized. Mm-hmm. When they discovered this, they were in awe and applauded. But they didn't know that, because that's certainly not something that's taught to South Koreans.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and still, they just elected a guy who clearly is kind of an anchor on American policies. Not an anchor, he's a drag on their policies, in that he's against the introduction of the missiles, and he would like to see talks, right? Or at least he says he does.
Yes, he would like to see talks. That's true. But it's interesting, to return to the point about propaganda. I mean, it's not recognized to the extent to which South Korea is a police state, mm-hmm. the extent to which it's, the information is controlled, that it's a totalitarian society, in many respects, every bit as much as North Korea is. And there's some incredible stories about the extremes to which South Korean authorities have gone in the past to prevent their citizens from knowing anything about North Korea. For example, it's said that at one point they used to have censors go through international versions of magazines like Time and cut out any picture that there was in there of Kim Il-sung. Or at one point they banned a type of crayon called the Picasso crayon because Picasso was a communist.
Wow. Well, this is Stephen Gowans, and Stephen, you've demonstrated that the South Koreans know as little about North Korea as us. That just means they're really not getting any information. We don't get any, except that there's a caricature of this young man. The article is titled "The Real Reason Washington is Worried About North Korea's ICBM Test," and it's July 5, and it's gowans.wordpress.com. Stephen, wish you well in New York and New Haven. Look forward to talking to you again.
Great. Thank you very much, Phil.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.